Hey guys, welcome back to the Spates Waterlad podcast. I am stoked to have Spates on board supporting Waterlad for season 4. And the reason I'm so stoked is because I do believe it is the best beer on the market. And the only real decision for me when I do go have a beer is, do I go for the Spates Gold Medal, the great tasting OG Lager, or the crisp and refreshing Summit Ultra with 75% less carbs? Always a very tough decision, but the beauty of it is there is no wrong decision to be made. So cheers to our mates at Spates for bringing you this episode. Good on you, mate. Well, today I'm not exactly joined by a lad, but whatever the female equivalent for one is, then in this episode I have one of the greats. She has a CV that would make any athlete proud, having won a gold medal at the Commonwealth Games and the Olympics in the 7-a-side format, while also winning a 7s Rugby World Cup. In the 15-a-side game, she's won not only one, but two Rugby World Cups, and along the way she's been a massive part in growing the women's game, not just here in New Zealand, but around the world. She is, of course, the ever-smiling legend herself, Stacey Walker. Welcome.
Whoa, what a welcome. I mean, thanks. I'm very excited to be on board and have a yarn with you.
Thanks for coming on. I know this has been in the pipeline for a while, pretty much since that Rugby World Cup, but it's nice to finally both have some mutual time off where we can get this done.
Yeah, absolutely. I wasn't giving you the scene for on purpose. But yes, a little bit of downtime, so I'm stoked to be on.
Yeah, but what a 12 months it's been for you, like looking back at your last sort of 12 months on the field with the 7s and the 15s game. You must look back at that and just sort of pinch yourself a little bit.
Yeah, it was interesting because actually if I rewind 12 months, yeah. Obviously two pinnacle events for 7s. We got bronze in the Commonwealth Games and then silver at the 7s World Cup. Obviously not what we wanted. So it was a goal of ours to get to that 15s World Cup and try and win it at home. And we did. So went from third to second to first place, and it's still such a surreal feeling. I've loved bouncing between 7s and 15s since I debuted like 8 years ago.
Yeah.
But to win pinnacle events, obviously to play in them is a pretty special feeling, but to win, it definitely puts the cherry on top of the cake.
Mm, you mentioned bumping in between the two sports. How hard is that? How do you find that going from 7s to 15 and back and forth?
If I'm honest, I actually really enjoy it. I definitely find it harder transitioning from 15s to 7s than I do the other way around. Obviously, a little bit fitter, a little bit faster, leaner. Sometimes have to bulk up more for 15s and not as much running, I suppose, in terms of speed outputs. But I do enjoy it. It keeps my mind fresh. Physically, such a different demand, I suppose, in both codes, but I definitely do enjoy the subtle changes between both.
Yeah, and I guess the group dynamics are completely different as well, isn't it? You've got different teammates, different cultures. How do they compare?
Oh, I actually love, like, 7s, you're with this group of girls, small amount of girls, obviously, only 20 contracted, 12 on every tour. Then you go to 15s and there's a squad of 32, 23 playing on Saturdays. I actually quite like the vibes. Like, I know I'm full-time 7s, every day I see them, but you go into the 15s environment and there's people from all over New Zealand. You know, you get to connect with girls that you don't usually see often unless you're playing against or with them on a rugby field. And I think that's probably made my career more special, is that I get to have those connections with so many different people from all around the country.
Yeah, and those connections are what it's all about, eh? Like, that's the coolest part of the game, really, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look back on your career once you do finish, it's those little memories that you make along the way, traveling the world, that little banter that everyone has within the team. You know how it is. Yeah. It keeps it fun, and that's why I love playing rugby.
Yeah.
It's because of the connections, because we love the game, and we get to travel everywhere.
And it must be pretty special at the moment, especially in the 7s game. You guys are on absolute fire. You're on fire, but you guys seem to be winning every tournament. And like you say, you're traveling the world with an awesome bunch of girls winning tournaments. You must sort of be on cloud nine.
Yeah, it's pretty funny actually, like talking about it. Yeah, we're 5 out of 6 World Series wins. I think we potentially just have to make the quarter this next tournament, so no pressure. But
is that to win the competition?
To win the World Series, yeah. And
oh, true.
We feel a little bit ripped off last year because we missed four tournaments out of the seven. We only got to play three.
Yeah.
We still managed to get fifth overall, considering we missed a lot of them. So, yeah, I suppose our goal for us first was to qualify for the Olympics, and we managed to achieve that in Vancouver a couple months ago. And then it'll be pretty awesome to win the World Series this year before heading into a massive Olympic year next year. But I know we're not perfect. We haven't been the best team perfect. I don't think any team's ever perfect. But we have been winning, and, you know, whether it's an inch or a mile, we've got to take those wins game by game, tournament by tournament, and I suppose now the biggest thing is refining the small errors that we're making and being consistent.
I like that. So you only have to make the quarterfinal. Have you ever not made the quarterfinal? Like, you guys seem to always be at least in the finals, eh?
Yeah, not from what I remember, but it's still tough. It's still tough. You know, there's sevens is a very fast sport, and if you look at the men's format, man, there's some teams who just come out of the blue from nowhere. And there's definitely female teams there who can surprise you sometimes, but we'll take it game by game, and hopefully we can get there.
surely you get there. Quarterfinals, please. Anyway, as always, I do like to start the podcast by sort of going through the journey from the start to hear how these legends become the legends that they are. And talk me through your sort of upbringing. I know your brother quite well. I got to play with him for a year in the Necky, but other than that, I don't know too much about your upbringing, so I'm looking forward to hearing about it.
Yeah, I feel sorry for you that you had to play with him. I'll credit my brothers, Bodine and Bronce. I honestly reckon if it wasn't for having big brothers, I'm the baby of the family. There's four of us, my older sister, two older brothers, and then there's me. Grew up around a lot of whanau friends, and I honestly, I'm grateful because they made things a lot tougher than they should have been, but I think it made it harder to be up for the sport. Upbringing, a little bit of a different story from me. So I was actually the only child out of my siblings born in New Zealand. Mum and dad were back and forth between Melbourne and Auckland for quite a few years because of work. Dad played rugby. And yeah, he went okay. Unfortunately, he chose my mum over sports, so he didn't quite make it. Lucky his kids did for him. moved back and forth and then went back to Melbourne when I was one. And my first 8 years of life actually was in Melbourne, Australia.
Oh, true.
Heaps of whanau there, played netball. We all played sport, obviously, followed dad and my brothers down to the rugby club every weekend, and, you know, I feel like everyone kind of does that here in New Zealand anyway. It's just a part of our life and culture.
Yeah.
And then 1 year, me and Bo, actually, we loved coming home back to Ruatoki, to the farm, to our nan, every Christmas holiday. So mum and dad would send us back, obviously riding the horses, motorbikes, down at the river with all our friends and our cousins and everyone who kind of lived in the house. And we just loved it so much that we didn't want to move back. So we pretty much cried to mum and dad on the phone. What were we, 18, 9 years old? And said, we don't want to get on the plane. And that's when mum and dad realised it was time to come home, back to New Zealand. And they packed up everything, sent it home on a shipping container. And, yeah, we started our young kid life here in Ruatoki. Loved it, loved the rural lifestyle, so peaceful and quiet. So many people around all the time. I think the coolest thing was we're very competitive whanau, so we hate losing.
Yeah.
We're very harsh on each other, very stubborn people, we're all the same. But I think I love that because we grew that competitive nature with one another. And that led to the sports field. It was actually quite tough being brought up in this small Māori town. Honestly, we were all like very fair. Everyone thought we were from Australia. No one really knew us. And if it wasn't for sport, if it wasn't for us joining our sports teams at school, I think we would have struggled because they quickly realised we were okay at playing code and they wanted to be on our team. So we're like, oh, okay, this is our way in to try and fit in with everyone that thought of us as different, I suppose. And then, obviously made friends and everyone realised, oh, actually they are from here. And so, it kind of just flowed on from there. Played sport. Obviously both sent away to boarding school, which was probably cool for him because rugby contracts led into Taranaki with you guys.
Yeah.
And I actually originally just loved netball and touch. I wanted to be a silver fern. That was my ultimate dream. Nothing else was on the radar until year 11, I think. I played my first game of rugby for Whakatane High School and just never looked back.
True.
So, yeah. Played kind of everything at school, you know, as kids do. You just like to have a bit of fun and whatnot. But that's how, I suppose, my transition started.
Oh, netball would be gutted, are they?
I know. I definitely don't think I'd fit in there now. Way too hard for me. I definitely love running on the field, not the court.
Yeah. What were you like at touch? You must have been pretty good at touch as well, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Nah, love touch. So... played with everyone, all my family. That was quite cool. Like every weekend I was at touch tournaments. Oh, and I'm so grateful that I played touch. I honestly reckon if I didn't, it wouldn't have made me be the better rugby player that I am today.
Yeah.
But I think I was 14 when I made the New Zealand under 15s team and I remember it clearly, I had to fundraise $3,000 to get to Australia. And we were so poor. Like, honestly, mum and dad struggled for years trying to get jobs and just to feed us. And it was very different. It was a contrast upbringing, actually, because when we were in Australia, I wouldn't say we were rich, but we had money.
Yeah.
And, you know, could go and do all these things, had things. And then we came back to New Zealand and it kind of went crashing down when mum and them couldn't really find these jobs. So it was a real tough time, but I'm so grateful for my family and just the community, like buying raffle tickets and, you know, sponsoring me, all these things just to represent our country. And it was a cool experience. And then when I learnt rugby actually paid you, I was like, ooh, hang on a minute. Let's choose this sport now. very grateful to this day.
So you made that $3,000 from raffle tickets, was it?
Yeah,
that's a fair few.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, but yeah, mum and dad did. They had like a cards night. They did a hangi fundraiser, batons up, like literally did everything. And
that's cool.
That was obviously to buy gear too, because I had the old wadi fuddy boots back in the day. But hey, I was grateful because it got me around the field. It's all good.
And I guess you couldn't complain either, really, because you were the ones who wanted to be back in New Zealand, so you had to put up with that.
Exactly, exactly. We were the reason why they moved home. And honest to God, to this day, my older sister and brother, they hate us. They're like, we had our lives sorted over there, because they were like 4 or 5 years older.
Yeah.
They had their plans, like end of high school kind of thing. And they blame us for not getting the opportunities that we got growing up.
Oh,
and I'm like, oh well, tough luck.
Worked for two of you anyway.
exactly. Grateful.
And I guess in the backyard and stuff when you're playing rugby, you would have been some of those games would have been pretty competitive. That's sort of the first memory I remember from you is all the boys giving sort of Bodine shit about his sister being better than him at rugby, and they saw that in the backyard, but they can't have been too far wrong, I guess.
No, well, yeah, I actually felt sorry for him. I knew he'd always get a bit of stick from the boys. He still drills it to me this day. He's like, oh, if it wasn't for me, you would have never made it. I'm like, okay, well, if you think so. But like I said, obviously real grateful to have two older brothers who hardened me up, and I think it definitely helped my skill set.
Yeah. So when you did give rugby your first crack, was that physicality side of it not intimidating for you at all? I guess that's probably the biggest turn off for a lot of young girls is that sort of big collisions and tackling and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But for you, it was probably, you're probably used to it.
Yeah, I was. I mean, my mindset and my aggression was there, but I'm not sure about my technique. So I had to learn. I had to learn throughout the year how to properly tackle. But I definitely was fearless because of having my two brothers there. And I think, too, I was real grateful because I know I had a few friends whose parents weren't very excited about them playing or who didn't let them play because it was such a physical sport. And I knew mum and dad always just wanted us to do what made us happy. So have to credit them too for letting me play a sport that wasn't very female dominant, I suppose, back then. But so many opportunities now, and I'm hoping that in households we've got more support backing young females to play the game.
Yeah, well, the game's changed massively, even in the last sort of 12 months, post that World Cup especially, like how much that women's game has changed. It's been pretty incredible.
Oh, it's been massive, and I know when they announced the World Cup at home, to be really honest, we were all talking like, oh, are we going to fill seats? Like, are people going to actually come watch the game?
Yeah.
And then after the opening round, I was like, wow, actually, people are watching. And then obviously semis and finals came, and it was a sellout. And
yeah.
I don't know, I suppose it just happened in such a short space of time, and to actually win a World Cup at home, it's such a surreal feeling. And people keep asking me, they're like, oh, what's better? You've won a Rugby World Cup, you won an Olympic gold medal. And it's real tough because obviously the Olympics are like the pinnacle, right, of sport around the world. Everyone knows about it. Everyone wants to go there. And I'm grateful, like, frick, we've won a gold medal. But it just wasn't the same feeling. Like,
yeah,
no crowd, no family support. But the 15s, everyone was there. You could run to the, what do you call it, the crowd. And, I don't know, just big hugs and everything. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah.
And I guess those games were so tense and tight that, they were sort of down to the last minute.
I feel like it made it more exciting to watch. And obviously being out there in tough, what would I say? I don't know. Close games, coming down to a kick or coming down to a line out. It's like moments that you get in those pressure moments that get the crowd off their feet. And I'm just glad we were on the right side of it, of the result.
Yes. So was the whole country, I think. That was... That was unbelievable, eh? How the whole nation sort of got in behind you. Like you said at the start, everyone at the start of the tournament was potentially doubting how much of a following they were going to get. But by the end of it, everyone, I remember being at the pub watching the final, and the crowd at that pub was just so in behind you girls. It was unbelievable scenes.
I think that's probably the coolest part about it was, like, so many people who have never seen women's rugby in their life, whether they were young kids, older people, like so many different generations, and to see them now backing us, I'm like, yay, we did that. But there's still a job to do for me. I'm like, oh, we need more home games so we continue that momentum, I suppose. We want more people jumping on board. And I know we've got a whole new coaching crew that have just been announced, and there are tests coming up. But yeah, I just hope for the future of this game that people continue backing it, and it's not just like a one-off because it was a World Cup at home.
Yeah, 100%. What do you make of the new coaching team? I saw that. What, that was announced today, was it?
Yeah, a little bit surprised, only because I don't know why I'm surprised. I didn't really know who was going for it, to be honest. it's cool. It's exciting. It's a new group. I personally don't know them, like, you know, on that kind of level. Obviously know that they've come from amazing backgrounds and whatnot, but I know Bunce will be there helping, supporting them, and make sure that this next campaign, hopefully we can go back to back to back. That's the goal.
How good would that be? That'd be so good. But I do want to get back to the sort of start of when you made the Black Ferns. You said that you gave rugby a go. You pretty much loved it straight away. So then what was your pathway? Because I know it happened all pretty quick for you.
Yeah, I pretty much played a whole season, and our school was the underdog, so we actually won the whole Bay of Plenty competition. Like, we'd unheard of, whaktane, little school. Yeah. We used to struggle to get numbers, two games, to be honest. And then got picked up from the Bay of Plenty Sevens. Coach kind of scouted me, played that. We weren't the greatest back then, but it was good fun.
What position were you playing back then?
So for 15s, I was actually a fullback, which was really weird because they wanted me with ball in hand, but they also didn't kick a lot. So not sure how that worked, but it was all good. I seemed to get the ball still, which was fun, running around. I could not kick to save myself. Both my brothers, both first five halfbacks, or both have great kicks on them, and I didn't get that gene. So that's why I'm stuck in the midfield, just run. And yeah, sevens, I kind of just played anywhere back then. Had no idea about positions. Just gave everything a go.
So then your next step from there, you make that team. And then how do you become a Black Fern from there?
Yeah. And then I actually went to one of the Go for Gold programs, the Bay of Plenty one. And pretty much got told, you're not fit enough. You sort your nutrition out. And fair enough, because I wasn't. Yeah. I was literally there just having fun with my friends. And I remember no one, absolutely no one from the Bay actually made the next step for that program.
True.
Yeah. So none of us were good enough, obviously. And then the New Zealand team, Sevens team, got named and whatnot. Had to make the move. I feel like the pathway back then, 2013, my last year of high school, it wasn't the greatest for women's rugby, and the best decision for me, obviously education was always going to be first, which is why I went to Waikato Uni for that. And then I knew Waikato rugby were quite strong, female rugby. It was the closest place to home. And so, yeah, made the decision to go there, and that's pretty much where I credit the start of my women's rugby career, because it was my first year playing FPC, first year playing club rugby, and that's probably where I got picked up from the New Zealand coaching setup, because the following year I made my debut for the 15s.
True. So, it was quite a fast. Day, like one full year and you're in there.
I know. I remember it, though. I remember going, so it was the World Cup in 2014. It's my first year out of high school. And a few of us drove up to the Black Ferns trials that year. And I remember watching it like, wow, this is so cool. Imagine being here one day. Yeah. Honest to God, I never ever thought it would be a year later.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just wasn't in my thoughts. I was like, oh, one day. And then it happened. And I was like, oh, this is great.
And how did that affect your study? What were you studying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I just enrolled in the sport degree at uni. Just wanted to be in sport, yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Loved it. And so I was lucky because I managed to do 2 full years of uni before I got picked up with my sevens contract. So when I made my debut in 2015, I think the payback then was $50 a day. Honestly, I was so stoked because I was a uni student on student allowance living in the halls. And then we went away for, it might have been 3.5 weeks to Canada. That's where I made my debut. So I thought I was so rich. I'm like, yes, I've got all this money from playing for New Zealand. And I clearly remember the first day we got outfitted with all this kits and shoes and boots. I was like, whoa, this is so, so cool.
Yeah.
So to come from $50 a day back then to the contracts we have now, it's been a massive growth in that area. And yeah, it's kind of cool to experience both ends of the spectrum. Mm. Obviously, we all play rugby because we love it, but when there's little incentives in behind it, it definitely makes it more special.
Yeah, so how did you juggle it back then? So obviously you weren't making enough to live off it. So what did you had to have a full-time job or part-time job, or how were you doing that?
I was lucky. I was on the Sir Edmund Hillary scholarship, which paid all my fees, free gym membership, and got to do all these leadership courses. But through that program, I was friend of a friend who needed a job in the it was actually the offices in the library that used to run all the fees for the university. So it was kind of like an accounting job, sort of, because you had to organize all the money. No experience whatsoever. Like, honestly, never did anything at school or what, but I got it because I was on the certified scholarship. Had that part-time job for a little while, for that year, I suppose, to afford to do things, be a student, still trying my hardest to make the New Zealand team. And then I remember the end of that year, I got told, my first year uni, I had missed out on a sevens contract.
Oh, true.
But you'll still be invited to camps and, you know, still train hard, still work hard. We see potential, blah, blah, blah. So it took another whole year before I actually got my first sevens contract. But I think that the special thing is I debuted 15s before sevens. People forget that, and that's why I suppose I hold a special place in my heart for 15s, because that was my first black jersey. That was my debut. It's kind of cool that I've been able to play both since then.
Pretty special to be able to do that. But you mentioned the Black Ferns and your debut. What was it like when you were first in that camp? Obviously, there wasn't a lot of money, like you said. What was the culture and what was the environment like? Was it professional, or what was it like going in there the first time?
Oh yeah, it was amazing. And to this day, I kid you not, like, even if you ask every single girl who went on that tour, that was 100% our favorite tour ever.
Was it? Yeah.
It was no pinnacle event. I think the most special thing was they came off the back of losing that World Cup against Ireland, so they didn't even make semis or finals, and they were all gutted. I think there were 12 of us who debuted. There was just no pressure. We had a whole new management group, lots of new faces, and it was just about going out there to have fun. Like, if we lost, we lost. It's all good. Let's just make this tour as fun as we could. And the management group that we had definitely made it fun. So I remember trying to do my first trial for the game, and it was intense, obviously, because you're just trying to represent your country. But at the same time, they always just made it all about having fun. So whether you're testing, whether you're haka practice, waata practice, whatever it was just, I don't know, it's those memories that you kind of never forget, especially when it's your first time. Yeah. I feel like it's always going to be a massive impression for you when you're in an environment for the first time. And so when we went over to Canada, I was just firstly grateful to be on a plane, again, traveling, representing our country. I was like, whoa, this is cool. 19 years old. I thought I was the man getting paid that much and getting to represent, obviously, my family on the world stage. But it was definitely a cool tour. Canada was awesome. And I'll never forget the moments with the girls who I suppose rode that wave with.
Yeah, and you've been in that side throughout the whole sort of last whatever years. What is it, 8 years or something? How long's it been?
Yeah. So 8 years, 9 coming up. So I found it cool because I've transitioned with so many different players. Like, I got to experience being with, you know, the older, experienced, a little bit more scarier players back in the day. I won't say names.
So they were in the girls' game as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you kind of don't want to say boo. You don't want to stuff up. You're just kind of in there, just kind of taking it as it comes, and then obviously growing into leadership roles within the team, and just seeing the difference or the change you kind of make with everything, really, game plans, with culture, with whatever the game brings you. So, yeah, it's been pretty awesome journey.
Is there a hierarchy or, like, any traditions you girls have now which have managed to, you know, last the time?
Honestly, there's probably not anymore. I feel like the game has changed so much. Potentially in 15s. Actually, no, that changed last year. There are the usually backseat bandits. Definitely not in sevens, really. There's zero tradition in sevens in terms of...
Because you're all in a van, aren't you, usually?
Yeah, I know. There's not many of us. But I remember 15s, there used to be the clean the boots if you were new to the tour, all that sort of stuff.
Oh, true.
But from memory, when I think to the World Cup, and there were, even just end of year tour, the one where we got slaughtered from England and France, there were no traditions there. So maybe we'll have to try and bring some back just to make it more fun. We're too nice.
Get your boots cleaned.
Yeah, I know. We're all too nice to each other.
Yeah, but you did mention that tour over in the UK, which obviously didn't go to plan, and it was only, 12 months before the World Cup. Mm. How were you feeling then? How were the girls feeling then about the upcoming tournament, and were they still confident that they could do it?
I actually, when I talk about that tour, I loved it, and I hated the results. But I still enjoyed it. And I suppose that's probably because I came from sevens and obviously a fresh new environment, obviously coming in and out all the time. And there were heaps of new faces. Results didn't go away. Probably not conditioned enough. Maybe played wrong game plan at times. I definitely know it was probably a blessing. If we had a won, nothing would have changed, maybe. Who knows? No one knows now. But to be able to turn it around within 12 months with new management, new players, that's pretty special. And it will probably go down in history as one of the greatest World Cups ever. Well, it's the greatest turnarounds, to be fair, within such a short time frame.
Yeah, man, it was. It was pretty impressive. So you spoke about the coaching staff. What did they all add? Obviously, Wayne Smith, Graham Henry. What did these two sort of add to the group?
Yeah, well, I was actually at the start of Black Ferns with when Glenmore was head coach, and me and him had a really good relationship. Like, I learned so much off him, and he got chucked in the deep end. I remember we had someone else as our coach, and then when we went away on to tour on Canada, he literally met us 2 days before we flew out to be our head coach, so he knew nothing about any one of us. He'd never coached women's rugby before. So I think that's why it was special during that tour, because we won. And he made these real cool connections and trying to learn so much within a short time to try and beat England and Canada, who had just played in the final of the World Cup the year before. So, yeah, over the years, been under GM for so many, so I like crediting him for the value, I suppose, and the growth that I got from his game. So, yeah, a little bit disappointing with the whole situation that went on, but coming back into 15s from 7s under Smithy and Ted, it was wicked. I actually thought, to be really honest, I've never been so, I suppose, scared being in the Black Ferns because of the way he coached. Like, he was very direct, very honest, and he wasn't shy to call you out whether you did good things or bad things. So you just had to suck it up. You literally just had to suck it up. And if you stuffed up and got pointed out, it's like, oh, well, move on. Like, don't do that again kind of thing. Since transitioning from both, it was always similar game plans, obviously maybe a couple of new things here and there. Well, when the whole management group changed, our whole game plan changed. So we came in after Comm Games and World Cup for Sevens into this World Cup campaign, pretty much having to learn a whole new playbook because everything was different. And me, Porsche and Gossie, we actually talked about how much homework we had to do at night, talking to the girls. Obviously, they had all been together that year playing Pack 4. They played in the Laurie O'Reilly series all together, so they knew the game plan in and out. Whereas we were kind of like, I felt like an outsider again. Like, obviously, I was a bit older. I debuted 7 years before a lot of the girls in the team, but you did feel like a new person because of all the new stuff. But I suppose when you're passionate about something, you do, you put in the hard mahi. You go and talk to who you need to talk to, make sure you know your position as good as you can. And yeah, we managed to pull it off and kind of fit in with the girls as best as we could in terms of the game plan.
Yeah, you certainly look like you fit in, but that is an underrated skill, having to learn a whole playbook, all the calls, all those little micro calls that, you sort of become second nature, or they need to become second nature so you can just make that call in an instant. But learning that in a whole new playbook in that short time frame, not easy.
It was tough, and we've got names in sevens, obviously, for a kick pass or for a run you know, all these different things, and then you've got to learn all these other ones, and then sometimes the names overlapped, so we would call something and then it's like, oh no, that's wrong. That's a kick pass in sevens, or that's a miss pass in sevens. Here it's whatever else it was called in 15. So it was confusing at times. But also the cool thing was there's enough of us, I suppose, sevens girls. I hate being called that, but we were the sevens girls in the 15s team, who had played together, who had those connections. So we could kind of have our own little connections on the field and say things that other girls didn't know, and it would work. Which probably made it more special and made us feel more calm being on the field, playing this new game plan. And the new game plan was pretty much for when Smithy rang us and we had our conversations with him about being in the team. It was like he wanted to play 15s like sevens. I was like, oh, well, yeah, we like that. We like to speed it up. We like to play a fast game. So it probably fitted us quite well, actually. Trainings were so tough, but so good at the same time.
Yeah, what was different about the trainings in terms of the toughness? Was it like the contacts or just him always barking orders?
Yeah, it was just like real intense. Only when it needed to be. Obviously, there's a good balance of having our easy days when we needed to, but honestly, the Thursday trainings was our double days. So we'd have one in the morning, and then the afternoon was pretty much just full on. Like, you just smoke each other. This is 2 days before playing a test match. But that was our last kind of smash and bash, do the game plan, and hit the level of detail that Smithy has on his game plans. You just see all the papers in his room. of like his focuses for training or his focus for the game that week. It was detailed there, but he'd always try and simplify it for us on game day. So usually have two focuses for us for the week. It could be like sight the receiver was one of them, and the next one was play through the line, like little detailed things, but he'd constantly say it throughout the week that it'd just stick and you'd know. You're like, oh yeah, I know what he wants us to do. So yeah, his game plan sheets honestly were unreal. Detailed right down to every single line out, what play he wanted off that line out. And the one cool thing I actually loved about him with as a backs coach and with moves is we probably had two or three midfield moves and maybe two backs moves, but so many options off them. So
yeah,
the year before we'd have this playbook of like 20 different moves that you had to try and know. And we were all good because we'd been in the team for so long. You just learn it. You just know it because you've done it. They're the same names every single year. They never changed. Maybe we added something in, but yeah, he literally only had two moves for us or two or three moves, and just you had to choose the right option at the right time, depending on the defense. So yeah, learned a lot off Smithy, the professor. And he didn't even know who we were. Like he never watched us play sevens or rugby before. He just trusted that the people around him were like, yeah, I suppose they can play too. They're 15s players, not just sevens players.
Yeah.
So that was cool too, that he didn't know our skill sets or who we were or whatever. We had to prove ourselves every single week in and out, which was cool.
Man, that's so interesting. Fascinating hearing that insight, and especially hearing that about the Wizard. Like obviously he's got the reputation, Wayne Smith, as being the mastermind coach, and hearing some of that's pretty cool. But when did you feel confident that you guys had turned the corner and you're a chance to win this competition? Obviously the 12 months earlier, like we spoke about, not great, but when did you feel like, oh, we've got the goods here, we could go the whole way?
I honestly reckon it was after the pool stages. So I actually picked up an injury, so I didn't play the second or third game. I strained my hammy in the first match, the opener. I was so gutted. But you know, injuries happen, it's all good. Managed to come back for quarters. But I feel like that belief really hit after we got the results from those three games. They were quite big score lines. First game was a bit scary, 17-0 down. Not the greatest for an opener, but managed to claw that one back. That's when we started thinking, okay, who are we going to cross over with? Played Wales twice, played them in the quarterfinal, and then obviously came up against France. And we knew France were going to be tough. Like, they've grown so much. They've put so much into their game too over there. And they were gutted because they didn't actually get to play us at the last World Cup. They beat us at India Tour, they were stoked because they finally got to play against us, and then they beat us. Like, damn it. But yeah, that's probably where the belief sat, and they kept talking about it. Actually, I remember our meetings, it was all like cliche, like, we're great rugby players, we've got the right game plan to try and win a World Cup, but it all comes down to mental toughness and the belief that you kind of have in yourself. We all knew if we just played our own game, you know, stuck to what we knew and just played what was in front, that was probably going to help us. So yeah, a few different scary moments in those series of finals games, but it's all good now. It's all good because, you know, we did it.
Yeah, even the semi-final, was it the semi-final where the French kicker had the kick to win?
Oh, man, I will never, ever, ever forget that moment. I remember looking up at the crowd and just being like, how can we lose like this? We can't lose a game to a kick. Yeah. I had literally given up. I didn't even watch the kick. True. It wasn't until the crowd just stood up and roared. I remember turning my head and all I could see was the ball landing in Kennedy's hands to the side of the post, and she just ran.
Yeah.
I've never run so fast to try and be a forward to secure a ruck, like this little back trying to be like, no, we can't lose it. And I actually have nightmares. I'm going to bring it up, and I hate talking about this, but 2020 FPC final, Waikato versus Christchurch in Christchurch, Canterbury in Christchurch. We literally had the game, and there was maybe 5 seconds, we had to hold the ball and we got turned over in a ruck and they played and scored and beat us. Oh, I will never forget the moment, eh? I was so gutted because the game was ours. Yeah. We literally just had to hold on to it. 5 more seconds, kick it out. And that was literally what I thought of in that moment. I was like, oh my God, just secure the ball, hold it and kick it out. So yeah, it's amazing what certain experiences give you in certain parts of games.
Yeah, well, that Waikato loss has obviously come back to help New Zealand with you racing to clean that ruck and secure that breakdown so that we win the semi-final. But then talk to me about the final. Obviously sold out Eden Park, up against England. What a game it was. And one moment in particular, the try of the century. People call it the girls' version of the Benji Marshall Grand Final flick pass. You're on fire. Talk me through that try.
Yeah, well, I'll be honest here. I actually hurt myself at training on the Thursday, and I was like, why are we doing this contact drill 2 days before a Rugby World Cup final? I was so gutted. So we'd always do contact before we'd do game scenarios on the Thursday afternoon, and it was wet. The field was terrible, and I went in, and I got tackled from the side, and I honestly reckon I got, like, Charlie in the side of my knee to the bone, though. And yeah, I don't know if you've ever had a Charlie in the bone, but oh, it was so sore. I managed to still continue training, but I was so worried. I was like, no, I can't not play this final. Like, so the next day I literally laid on my bed game ready the whole day. I was like, nah, I just need to do nothing until the final. Got to warm up and kind of sprinted, and I was like, you know what, adrenaline's going to kick in. I know it. Yeah, adrenaline's going to kick in. It's a World Cup final. You're all good. Kind of strapped it a little bit. I did like this little tape around the underneath. Just probably more mental than anything. No one would have ever known, I suppose, that I played this final hurt a little bit.
Nah, definitely because, didn't show that when you guessed on that sideline.
I know. And even in that moment, there was no pain whatsoever. Like, just the last thing you're thinking of when you're running in space. But I just remember being in the sheds and the talk being, it's all good, like, very calm out there, continue doing what we're doing, but we need to start strong. Like, second half, you know, this is going to be the most important start, and this is going to, you know, kind of make or break us to try and win this World Cup. And, yeah, when the ball came out, I just ran. I was like, I don't know, in my head, I was just like, you know what, just run. And if I'm being really honest, when I did the little kind of dummy, well, not really dummy, I kind of just looked. I saw Skerritt in the corner of my eye. So when I looked, and it was Aisha, like, she is the hardest player to tackle. Honestly, she's just like this rocket coming at you, and you cannot stop her. When I seen her and I knew Skerritt would be worried about her kind of running into her channel, I was like, okay, this is the little conversation I'm having in my head in this split second. As you do on the field. I just remember looking in the corner of my eye and seeing her kind of pull up a bit, and I was like, yes, that's exactly what I want you to do. So obviously did my little dummy, carried on running, and it was, Renee is actually so good at it, and I have to credit her. She runs the best support lines, like, always there, always through the line, always cutting the right people off. And I heard her scream my name. I just heard her say, Stacey, right? So I was like, oh, yep, sweet. Just had to draw in the next person. Luckily, gave the pass. And I actually started stumbling a bit because I hit the girl. I think it was Zoe Harrison, their first wife. I hit her in contact after I had passed it. And then I was kind of just looking up, and I saw heaps of people, Kendra, I think Aish, everyone was running all these mean support lines. I was like, oh, yep, she'll probably pass back in. Until I realised that she actually veered out my way, and I was like, oh, I've got to get there. So, yeah, pretty much just ran, and the way she kind of ran and cut, I think it was Ali Kildan, off to not let her get to me, was so grateful. Yeah. So I have to give that try to her because, yeah, I maybe initially started it. Oh, well, actually, it started from the kickoff. So you've got to credit the forwards. Always been the hard mahi up front. she definitely done a great job to definitely set me up in that corner.
Yeah, and then what's the thrill once you go over, once you put that ball down? What's that feeling like?
No, well, Smithy hates me, for going so close to the sideline. Oh, and true. I said to him, Well, you know, you've got to, I've always been told you got to get as close as you can to that post for your kicker. And I knew Renee was kicking it. So I was like, okay, she's just set me up here. I need to get as far in as I can so she can get the kick. And I'm so gutted because, yeah, I nearly ran out. I knew where the dead ball line was.
How close were you? I didn't notice you being close.
I was close. Like, honestly, so close. And Smithy, he replayed it. He kept replaying it to me. And he's like, look at your foot. I'm like, yeah, whatever. And the worst thing is Renee missed the kick. So I was like, fuck, I should have just scored that one. but nah, it's all good. There's, you know, those little moments you can think about. Oh, woulda, coulda, shoulda.
Yeah.
End of the day, it's all good.
Yeah, you got the chocolates and you won the World Cup. How good. And then what are the celebrations like? What's a Black Ferns celebration like after a Rugby World Cup victory at home in front of a sold-out Eden Park?
It was wicked. The best feeling afterwards was going to your family, just giving them big hugs and, you know, there to celebrate that victory. It was like, oh, this is amazing. This is such a cool feeling. And then it led to, obviously, the presentations, and then we started getting kicked inside after, you know. I just wanted to stay out there all night and thank everyone for being there and supporting us and staying like 2-3 hours after the final whistle had blown.
Yeah.
Because they were, you know, they were stoked that we won a World Cup, but we were stoked that people were just there watching.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I tried my best to just go and see everyone. Obviously, family first always. But, yeah, eventually got kicked inside. And I was injured, so I'm like hobbling around on my sprained ankle.
That's right.
Went inside, obviously opened up a bottle. First things first, got to celebrate with a little beverage. And then we got kicked out of the shed to go do media, had to do all that sort of stuff. And of course, the Rugby World Cup final, Stacey gets injured and gets cited for drug testing.
Oh, so, Stacey. Even after a World Cup final. Wow, it's painful.
I was so gutted. So, me and Jonah were the two picks. I was like, interesting. Scored a try, and then the one who won us the World Cup with her hand got picked. I was like, okay, was this randomly picked or. So yeah, we had to stay behind and do our drug testing while everyone got to celebrate on the bus, you know, singing, dancing, laughing, celebrating. We'd just run a Rugby World Cup and we're just kind of like, oh, mean, we just stay here by ourselves. And she actually took longer than me. So I Ubered back to the hotel.
Oh, you ditched her.
I ditched her. I was like, I'm so sorry, you're taking too long. So yeah, just took the initiative. I like messaged our manager. I was like, sorry, I'm not waiting for the van. I'm getting home. I need to go celebrate.
Fair enough.
Yeah, ended up, just had a shower, whatever, and then caught up with our family. Unfortunately, the celebration place with New Zealand Rugby, you could only bring 4 family members. And I've got a pretty big whanau. There's probably 20 of them waiting in the casino for me. So
you got to choose your top 4.
I know. I'm like, oh, that's a bit hard. So yeah, showed face obviously with them, and then went back and stayed at the casino with my family for a few hours. But it was the next day that was the best. You probably heard about it, but we did get invited on the ferry to Waiheke Island to celebrate at Ted's house, and wicked host. Honestly, they were so cool, and he put it on for us, and yeah, we definitely downed a few cold ones, still buzzing out that we had obviously just won a World Cup.
Yeah, what's a party at Ted's like? What does he put on? Like, what's the
honestly, he had every single beverage you could think of. I was like, be nice. But it was, yeah, it was cool. Real cool, chill vibes, played games, whatever. We had to dress up and all that sort of stuff. But, yeah, he's a great host. And I have to share, people have probably already talked about how cool it was to see Smithy and Ted grow in a female environment, obviously for the first time for them. It's very different to lads, but the emotion that they would express. I remember Ted pretty much cried at like a couple of our trainings just of how proud he was to see the progressions of the girls throughout the year and each week throughout the campaign. And he didn't do too much coaching. He was just kind of there observing and seeing everything. But whenever he spoke, it was so cute and so inspiring. So, yeah, it was pretty awesome to have him in our environment and share his words of wisdom and the knowledge he's gained over the years and all the many experiences him and Smithy have had together. Yeah, it was pretty cool. Oh,
that is very cool. And how does that sort of compare to Olympics? When you win the Olympics, you mentioned the Rugby World Cup, you enjoyed that one more, but what's winning an Olympic gold medal like? Like, must be pretty crazy as well.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I remember doing projects at school on the Olympics and getting asked, would you like to go there? I'm like, hell yeah, that would be amazing. Like, doing the Olympic rings all the time and doing all these different studies on athletes. I think I did Kathy Freeman. I definitely remember it. I have no idea why, but I did choose her. And doing like posters on these athletes and whatnot, winning medals at an Olympics. So it was kind of cool when, firstly, just getting named, I was like, whoa, I'm actually going. But then you start thinking, oh, okay, I need to get there first. Like, you could get injured. You could, like, so many things could happen in such a short space of time. So it's trying to find the balance of not being stupid, but also working hard to make sure you actually get there. Obviously run out for the first time. No crowd, a little bit different, but knowing thousands were watching back home on TV, it was cool. And after the first game, I was like, yeah, okay, this is cool. This is fun. Let's keep going to the end. And after that final whistle, it was actually cool. I remember the moment in the final because I was on the field and then I kind of got subbed. I think it was the last 2-3 minutes of the game. And I think we're up 2 tries. So I was like, started to get a little bit more confident. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah. Now we're good here. And then France broke and then they scored a try. So I was like, oh, hang on, it's getting close. And then we had the ball, our possession. And then once we did score our last try, I think it was maybe 30 seconds before the game had finished. We're like celebrating on the sideline already, knowing that we did it. Like, it had been a goal for us. We'd won silver at the last Olympics that I didn't actually go to, but I knew, you know, the hurt and the pain that the girls went through on that podium because they wanted a gold medal 5 years later after the other Olympics. So, yeah, it was cool. I clearly remember my feeling was it was shock because, one, we're at the Olympics, and two, we had just won an Olympic gold medal, and not everyone in the world gets the opportunity to actually attend the games. Like, to just be there is cool, but then we won. So everyone's like in tears, crying, da da da, and I'm just kind of like, there, like, oh, we did it. I had no emotion. I was stoked, obviously ecstatic, but no tears, just like, I don't know, I have no idea why, but I stayed in shock for quite a while until it finally sunk in. Probably didn't sink in for a little bit, didn't sleep that night, and we had an early morning flight the next day. So yeah, it was cool. It was special, and I'm just grateful that I get that opportunity. So now, obviously, my family call me, or especially my brothers, call me the golden child. There's a little running joke in our family that Bo's the golden child because he's never really lived at home, and mum and dad do everything for him because of that reason. So we always say, oh, he's the golden child, he's the golden child, and since winning the medal, apparently I've taken the title. So I was like, oh, yeah, it's all good. I'll take it.
Claim it, yeah. Not a bad nickname to pick up. But it's funny you mentioned that feeling because I always felt I never won a gold medal or a World Cup, but every time I won something significant, I felt that same feeling where I felt like I should have been feeling more buzz than I was actually. I was like, man, I've done it, but is this it? Is this the feeling? Why don't I feel like really, really happy or like sort of like what you're explaining there? Like, you're just sort of like, oh, I've done it. Now what?
I think the worst thing too was because all the girls, pretty much all the girls were just like in tears. If you see, we always give them a little bit of stick because if you see the close-up videos of them in slow-mo, they're just in like hysterics of tears and they're, you know, those ugly cry faces you do when, I don't know, when you're crying and I'm just like, yay.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Really wanting to love it, yeah.
No tears whatsoever. But yeah. I was happy deep down inside.
Yeah, no doubt. Oh, Olympic gold, Rugby World Cups. Oh, you've done it all. So what are the plans going forward? Obviously, you've got a World Series to win in the next few weeks, but
yeah.
Post that, what's the plans for you going forward?
Yeah, well, I might as well share it, eh? Because I'm sure by the time this podcast is out, everyone will start finding out. But
well, if it's not, this is our announcement video. How good.
Heard it here first. obviously, after the World Series, we usually go on a six-week break, compulsory. It's always mid-year. And then we've got no World Series now until November. It's quite a big gap from, like, June to November, 5-6 months. And there's no way I'm doing that long a preseason. I will just get bored out of my brains. So had the conversation with our coach, and initially I just wanted to go back to 15s. I was like, oh, yep, there's some tournaments coming up, there's Pac 4. I'll be keen to go back in. And he's like, yeah, nah, I don't think you should do that. And I was like, oh, why not? Got shut down there. So have to stick with sevens, and he gave me another opportunity to go and play in the Premier Rugby Sevens over in America.
Oh, true.
So that competition is growing. You actually get paid to play, which is real cool, depending on where you place each tournament. So, yeah, gonna hopefully it's cleared. I think it's cleared by now from New Zealand Rugby to let me go over there. A few of us going just for the experience. Honestly, I hate having long breaks. I hate preseason. I just love keep going. Yeah. I'm like, I'll just, you know, stay at a level where I can still, might not be fit at my peak at certain times, but I just don't want to be unfit.
Yeah.
I just hate it so much. That's just not me. So I was like, oh, this is my way of not having too much of a break and then going into a 2-month preseason.
Yeah.
You're probably used to it, but I'm not, because I just try and play everything that I can.
May as well. Why not? Hey, play
what I know. Well, there's opportunity. Yeah. It's like, why not? So yeah, looking forward to going over there for 6 weeks. I think we're being based in San Diego, and then get to travel around the States, depending on where the tournaments are. Go play that, then come back. I think I get the last 4 weeks of preseason. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's all good. I can deal with that. And, yeah, there's definitely a couple of tournaments lined up. I think maybe one in Fiji, maybe one in New Zealand, just with Aussie, Fiji, local teams before the World Series kicks off again in November. And that's going to be massive. We've qualified for Olympics already, which is cool. But now we have to try and find, I suppose, the right balance of playing good rugby but not showcasing too much, right? Because you're going to save some things for the actual Olympics where you want to peak, really peak.
Man, that's exciting though, eh? Like a cool opportunity again to travel, see a new experience, make some money. So did you say you got prize money depending on where you finish? Is that how your contract works?
How the contract goes. So it's quite, like, obviously cool motivator to
hope you're in a good team.
No, I don't even know what team I'm playing for yet. I think they're like,
oh, true.
It's like a draft. They kind of I'm not 100% sure how it all runs. It's all real new, and they're trying to make it exciting. And you know, in America, how they do the NBA drafts and all that sort of stuff. They're trying to find similar ways of making it fun like that, and you get to.
That'll be cool. You'll be first drafted, sure.
Oh, doubt it. No. So yeah, I'll suppose just wait and see what team I'm getting drafted into. I still think I get 4 weeks off post Toulouse, so I'll still get a decent break.
Yeah.
Training, but not, you know, not having to be at a base. Can just kind of do self-directed stuff to lead into that tournament. So, yeah, should be
nice.
another massive 12 months ahead.
Yeah, another massive 12 months ahead. You called it. And what about post-footy? It's something that's come up quite a bit on this podcast recently. Have you got much plans for post-footy, or what's the sort of dream for you once rugby finishes?
Yeah, thought about a few things. So, got a few quals now, obviously, in sport, and did a bit of business stuff.
Is that your scrunchy business?
Yeah. So started that after COVID. Just a lot of fans wanting them and actually kind of provoking me to do my own. So that's kind of cool. It is just a side hustle, though. Like, I couldn't live off it, if I'm being honest. But the amount of people and young girls and teams I can make happy, that inspires me and keeps me going. So, yeah,
it takes up
time, but I love it.
Is that something you would look to potentially grow
once
footy finishes?
I've thought of it. I've definitely thought of owning my own business one day. That would be pretty wicked. I know it wouldn't be easy. But obviously dabbled in a bit of media doing a bit of reporting stuff, Māori TV the last couple of years, and it's been a real cool eye-opener. To be honest, though, I don't think I would just want to stay in rugby. If the opportunity came and it was obviously good enough for my future or whatever I wanted to do, I'd jump at it. But I think I just love sport in general. So whether it's doing stuff in New Zealand, traveling the world again, as long as it revolves around sport, I'll be pretty happy. Okay. That's what gets me up every day. That I'm obviously passionate about it in so many different ways. So that could obviously be an opportunity too. But I'm not finished playing yet, so I'm just going to keep playing.
Mate, you got plenty of years left.
Just going to keep playing in. Yeah, little rumours about potentially going off to play league. Obviously, a lot of opportunity now with that. So I'm not going to say no. I'm not going to close the door to any other codes, but I will.
True.
The goal is to get to the next Olympics, and then we'll reassess after that.
True. I didn't know. Is it league quite big for the women over there in Australia?
Yeah. They've got have marquee players and everything. The money has grown so much. I think it's where Sevens was maybe 6 years ago. There's a minimum contract of 30K. That's for the whole team. Obviously you have different tiers and levels, but you've got girls on 100K over there. That's definitely livable for, you know, that kind of season. So might give it a dabble. Who knows?
Well,
I don't even know the rules, but I'll learn them.
Well, there we go. Another headline here. Yeah. Stacey Walker's off to the NRL woman. What is it called for the women's? The W.
NRLW. Just added on the women's towards the end. We've obviously got Gail Broughton playing over there. She's code-switched.
Yeah.
And there are a few Aussie girls, Aussie Sevens girls, who have already made the switch over there. To be fair, I reckon there'll be more people doing it. I mean, I know there are more people doing it, but I'm not going to share who that is yet. You'll find out in the meantime.
I look forward to finding out. But wherever the money goes, that's where the players and the people end up going, isn't it? It's like Japan at the moment. Look at, man, everyone's trying to get to Japan. It's such a flooded market for these high-level internationals at the moment. If the money's good, why wouldn't you take it, really?
It's 100%. And I always talked about, when I make decisions for different opportunities and whatnot, it's, for me, I, obviously have these goals. Everyone has goals and dreams that they want to work towards. But I'm so grateful to have achieved literally not everything, I mean most things in rugby. I still haven't won a provincial title for sevens or 15s, and that'll always haunt me. I've never won.
Had your
anything.
Chance, didn't you?
Always come running up, runners up. I know I've won in a gold medal in the World Cup, but you know where it all starts at provincial level. That's always where pretty much your career starts with everything after club. I think it's time, potentially time, depending on how the next couple of years go, on a new challenge. But we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. I might not want to leave. New Zealand rugby is actually pretty good. Get some pretty cool incentives here.
Yeah. Well, exciting times ahead, no matter what you choose, no doubt. It's going to be successful. But as always, we have gone to our Instagram for some questions. And, you have some seriously, I'm going to say, obsessive fans who maybe asked 15 questions each, because they obviously big fans of yours, which just goes to show how much you are loved by a lot of young girls around the world. But one of the main ones was around the change of last name. I think this one came in probably about 15 times. So you've obviously changed your last name back. Was Stacey Flula to now Stacey Walker. What's the insight there?
Yes, insight. There is insight. Unfortunately, had made the split decision with my now ex-husband. So currently not together anymore. And, you know, it's honestly all amicable, very amicable. Things just weren't meant to be, and the decision had to be made for the best of both worlds, I suppose. And, I suppose new journey ahead. Zero regrets on everything. It was a great time while it lasted. And I loved carrying his family name. They are the coolest people in the world. Had some of my best moments in life with them, and they're the best supporters too. They're throughout all the World Cups and Comm Games supporting 100%, and it was an honour to obviously wear his name. But Like I said, unfortunately, things didn't go to plan as we had hoped or expected in life. Mm-hmm. And we are no longer together, but it's all good, you know, got the right support behind both of us. Obviously wish him all the best with his future, and he's done the same. And yeah, we kind of just move on and go from there.
Oh, mate, that's good to hear. So how hard is that, changing that last name? Like, obviously, it's a big decision for all the women athletes when they do find love. Yeah. They have to change their last name. They create a brand around their first last name, and then they change it, and they're called you.
It's funny because we do talk about it, and I honestly reckon it's like situation dependent. So some girls, they're probably like the last person in their family to carry their family name. So they're just like, no, there's no way I'm changing my name. Yeah. I was complete opposite. So my dad has 16 siblings, all to 16. The same. 16. So he's one of 16.
Wow.
All to my nan and koro, like obviously same family. And my dad is the third to youngest. And then they've all at least got 4 kids each. So you do the math. I've literally got like way over 50 first cousins. And to be honest, a lot of them are males. So there's 10 boys, 7 girls, 6 girls in our whānau. Yeah. There's a lot of wākas in the world, especially in Ruatuki. So when I got the opportunity to change my last name, I was like, oh, wow, that is definitely going to happen. Like, it's all good here. We are not going to lose our name anytime. So big whānau, and I just thought it like cool for him because Ricky played rugby growing up, and he was awesome. He never quite made it because of injuries and whatnot. Mm. His dream was to become All Black, as every young boy, you know, dreams of doing.
Yeah.
But didn't make it, so he obviously met Black Fern, and then for me to obviously carry their name on the back of a black jersey, it was special. Mm. And I remember the first time I did it was real cool. I was actually here at home at the Hamilton Sevens in 2020 before COVID.
Yeah.
It was cool, but like I said, unfortunate things happen, and back to Waka. I'm still trying to get used to it, I'm going to be honest. I'm like, Stacey Waka my whole life, and the last 3 years I haven't been. Now I've got to try and, you know, change back and sign things and remember,
new signature again. Forget about that. Yeah.
Yeah, true. But it's all good. It's all good.
I can't believe the old man was one of 16. That's crazy.
I thought
three was a lot of kids.
16. I still meet I still meet family members to this day. Like, there's just so
true that you've never met. Yeah,
but it's cool, and that's what I loved about our upbringing. And there's so many people around all the time, and you know, you just come over and you just make it work. You just make things work with lots of people in the house.
Very good. Like that one. Okay, next one. Did you ever not smile while scoring a try, and how did the smiling start?
There are times I don't smile, and those rare occasional times are usually when I'm in the red. Like, I'm absolutely knackered on the field. There's no way or no time to smile when you're running or putting that ball down. Yeah. To answer that question, there's definitely moments, probably not lots, but there are moments, and I actually compiled a whole lot of photos. There's obviously a lot of smiling ones, but the other time is usually fending someone, you know, when you just got to try and be like real aggressive and you're like,
bit aggressive
kind of thing. Those are when it kind of screws up. There's also another time when I'm not smiling, and that's jumping for the ball in the air. All I see is my face like screwed up and my eyes closed when they should be opened, but all good.
You're doing well if you're smiling going up for the ball.
That's definitely
not me. That's commitment to the smile.
And not sure where it started or how it started, but I think I remember the series where I got, so unfortunately the year Porsche got injured, she did her Achilles, I started getting a bit more game time because obviously Porsche being Porsche, you just stay behind her because she's amazing. I got my opportunity to play more in the World Series, and I was just having a ball. I was just having fun, and I think that's where Ricky Swinnell, commentator from here, nicknamed me the Smiling Assassin, because I was just loving it, like just enjoyed my time on the field, and I was like, oh my god, this is so cool, like all the game time I was getting. It's just kind of flowed on from then. I think it was 4 years ago now.
No, you definitely look like it. You definitely look like you're loving your time out on the field, which is just very cool to see. Okay, next one. Favorite sidestepper? This might be your brother, is it?
He'll want me to say him. But you know what? Nah, he's not getting that credit today. Favorite sidestepper? Oh, that's real hard because I've played alongside like some pretty awesome people, and I'm gonna be biased and choose someone I've played with, not against.
Yeah.
And if I have to go like present or like kind of most recent player within the last few years, oh, now I feel like I'm being biased because everyone's gonna be like, why didn't you say me? But I'm gonna say her because she's not playing anymore. She just retired last year and she was a legend of the game, and she doesn't get the credit she deserves as Renee Wycliffe, or Renee Woodman Wycliffe now. Like such an underdog. She's been playing for years. More known as Portia's wife at the moment, but I think it's like Renee is, you know, other way around. She, if you watch highlights of her stepping, honest to God, it is unreal. And she was one of those who I used to watch footage of growing up. You know, you start learning about past players.
Yeah.
And back in the day, playing touch, playing rugby, it's hard. It's so hard to defend and whatnot. So, yeah, I'm going to give the credit to her. Well, now all my Black Friends Seven sisters are going to be like, whatever, it's me. But that's what I'm picking today. That's who I thought of first.
Well, fair enough. You go with your gut because it's generally true. Okay, next one. Stace, tell them about your chip and chase in the Bay of Plenty Under 18 final. Now, I always love stories like, that sounds like a good try.
Yes, I do remember that. Like I said, I'm not usually a kicker. I'm just better off with ball in hand. But I don't know, you know, you see an opportunity and your body just kind of does things, reacts without thinking, and that's what I did. So, yeah, pretty stoked about the chip and chase there. I've never done it again. You know what?
One off.
This is actually my goal to do it in sevens. It's literally one of my goals at the moment. I would love to bring it back out again on the world stage. That's one of my goals, and also to kick my own conversion one day, but not yet. We'll see. We'll see about that. Great memories in that Bay of Plenty under-18s team. Loved it. Still fresh as to rugby. Like I said, I played fullback, didn't even know how to kick, didn't know many rules, still probably learning the game. But yeah, it was a cool time. It was a cool time with the girls back then. Just playing for fun and obviously representing our province.
So did you chip and chase the fullback? Were you one-on-one? Where did the chip come in?
Yeah, nah, it wasn't. I don't even think there was a fullback. It was literally like the back line. Maybe the fullback was in the line. I don't know.
You caught them out of position. But
I just saw no one there. Okay. So I was like, I think this is my opportunity.
Did you catch it on the full?
Nah, it bounced. But the bounce was like perfect. You know how you kind of get the rolling ones and you're like, damn it. It was like chip, chase, bounce, catch, run. Score. So
the glory days and the under 18s. Yeah, good. Okay, two more. What's the most impactful things rugby has taught you?
Oh,
yeah, we're going deeper here.
That's great. That's deep. Hard to kind of put that down to one thing. Yeah. The most impactful thing about rugby. I think for me, the biggest thing that I've learnt, or the quote, I love quotes. I absolutely love quotes. Actually, I've got two favorite quotes that I really have to say.
Sweet. Say them both.
But those are my, I suppose, the impacts it has had on my life and my careers. The first one is, nothing worth having ever comes easy. So you quickly learn in sport or in rugby or professional life or sporting athlete life that you have to work hard. Like I knew I had talent. And like I said, I got turned away because talent was just only going to get me so far. But you know, you have to dive in those dark, deep places. That's definitely something I always think about. I'm like, you can never just be given things. You have to work for it. You have to earn it. And it makes it much more sweeter. So obviously being injured many times, that's the quote that kind of helped me get through. It's like, yeah. All good. It's not easy, but it'll always be worth it. That's one thing. And the second one, probably very similar, is that everything always happens for a reason. Very cliche, but mentally, I honestly think that helped me. That has helped me the last 8 years get throughout this career, this amazing career that has taken me around the world, is trying to not get upset on all the small things that happen. It's like, it's all good. Like, yep, you're injured, or yep, you dropped the ball, or yep, you didn't get selected for this, it's okay. There's always something else. There's a reason for it. Even if you never figure out the reason, it's all good. But mentally, no, it keeps you in the game. So, yeah, those little impacts, I suppose, on those learnings, being professional and trying to juggle life. And, you know, it's tough. It's a tough one. You know how it is. It's trying to juggle your family, your friends, your hobbies, your career, everything. It's tough, but those are little things that have impacted me and made me a better, not just a better player, because I always think of the overall hauora, the overall well-being of being a better person.
I like that, and a couple of nice quotes. How good's that? And that's probably going to go on to this next question. Last question that I ask everyone is, best piece of advice you have for a Waterlad listener? And you've given a couple of quotes, maybe early.
Don't go again. No, that's all good.
You've got more. She's got more.
I've got more. I think for me now, especially towards, I wouldn't say my end, because I've still got a little bit of me, I think. I'm only 27.
Yeah.
I think the biggest, I suppose, piece of advice for you Waterlad listeners is to understand the importance of balance of your whole life. Obviously, you can get caught up in working hard, whether it is sport, whether you're a teacher, whether you're a chef, whether you're absolutely anything in the world, that you don't forget about anything else. I feel like if you want to give your best in life and, you know, you want to achieve big things, you can't just stick to one thing. You've got to try and do your best to continue looking after your family, be there for your friends who have always been there for you day one, and try and get it. For me, like, I think of balance as not 50-50 equal to anything. Something's always going to take priority over something else at a certain stage in your life or a certain part of the year. But for me, it's getting that balance right, because too often we work so hard, we're so ambitious and passionate about our hobby or, our dream job, that we forget the little moments. And that's something I've definitely noticed or realised the last few years, is give yourself time. That's definitely important. You can't just keep giving. You have to fill your cup up in other ways. So, you can, like I said, have a better hauora overall, not just focusing on one thing. That's been the massive part of my journey. My growth is that, you know, I just did kapaka on the weekend because I love my culture.
Yeah.
It was like a small amount of time that I gave to it, but it really filled my cup up and my soul. And when I came back to training on Monday, I was like ready. I was like, whoa, this is so cool. Like, I've done something for my whānau, for my culture, for my community. Now it's time to step back on the training field, get ready to go win this Toulouse Sevens. And, you know, you kind of have those little goals and you put more effort and time into those things when it comes. So rambled on a bit there, but I suppose you get the gist.
I get it, and what a piece of advice. Jeez, that was one of the best ever. Love that one from you, and what a way to finish what is one of the greatest podcasts. Really appreciate you giving up your time and coming on. You're, like I said at the start, you're an inspiration for so many, not just in New Zealand, but like I said, around the world, with what you've done in the women's game, and what a story it's been, and hopefully for many more years. Good luck over in America.
Yeah.
And then over in the NRLW.
Hopefully. Yes,
exciting times ahead for you. So look forward to following you.
Yeah. Thanks, bro. And thanks everyone for listening. Ngā mihi nui, kia koutou katoa. I'm not done yet. I've still got more things to achieve, but we'll definitely see you guys out there.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. And if you've got this far, I'm guessing you enjoyed the episode. So if you did, please give it a share if you can. And also cheers to our mates at Spates for sponsoring this episode.
G'day guys, Tim Bateman here from O Studio. If you're trying to get some more control over your own time and money, and therefore looking to open your own business, O Studio might just be the option for you. We really are the one-stop shop for all things well-being. We're much like a gym, really, in terms of a financial model, but instead of fitness sessions, we offer sauna sessions, ice baths, flotation therapy, massage, yoga, Pilates, meditation, and a recovery space with tools like Normatex. Look, well-being is a $4.1 trillion industry worldwide, and we've found a model that works, so the key for us now is finding the right people to join the journey. If you're interested, fill in your details at ostudio.co.nz/lad, and I'll get in touch.